Welcome to the podcast. We're really excited to have you listening. My name's Matt.
And my name's Riley.
So we actually had some issues, but unfortunately Riley's phone died. But before that, we were talking about just how the news is so addicting, and just kind of like how the landscape has changed in the industry.
It seems like, especially in recent years with the internet and everyone being online for such extended amounts of time, there's a much more incentive to sensationalize articles and do anything to get clicks. And what the result of that is, the news has become quite addicting. It's the best gossip out there.
Yeah, I think it really has to do with the whole internet thing, just because the news used to be something that was super, like, the barrier to entry for the news was so high, yeah, right, that only a select few could. Now they have to compete with all these like little guys who, yeah, just say whatever to get clicks, right? So it's pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like back in the day, you could think of how hard it would have been to get on TV, like if there's only three channels. Now you can broadcast whatever you want to anyone.
Yeah, just like we are right now. Seriously. Yeah. We're hypocrites, I guess.
I guess. We're addicting our viewers.
Maybe one day. We'll see.
Getting hooked on the podcast.
But yeah, I don't know. I think it's quite interesting. I find it really weird how some of the smartest people around right now, mm-hmm, their entire job isn't to innovate, right? It's just to get people to click more,
yeah,
on different things, right? Like, you think of like the click dot on ads. Com.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think of the dot-com craze, right?
Yeah.
It was just all these entrepreneurs who were doing whatever they could to get people to click on ads on their company, right? And a lot of these companies worked was they'd have ads on other people's companies, right? And they'd be paying those companies for ad space, and then these people would come over to their site, and they would just make revenue through ads on their site. Which I, like, how crazy is that? People are just like,
it's pretty wild.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting. So yeah, I don't know.
The internet is such an insane arena.
Yeah,
that everyone's interacting in.
It's kind of just got no rules, like, at all. No.
Just billions of people doing whatever they want online. Anyone can post whatever. Super hard to police it in any way.
Do you think it'll ever become more policed, or it'll always just be this kind of rogue thing?
I think they should keep it rogue.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you police it, then it's just free speech.
That is true. But how about this like net neutrality thing that was going on, right?
Yeah.
Did you know what was happening with that?
I saw it all over Reddit, so that's mainly where I got my info from, and they were all super against it, but
yeah,
it does seem like that it just gives priority to like certain companies. So I don't like the idea of websites being buried.
Yeah, right.
Because then how can you expect new websites to ascend to the top if they can't even get a foothold?
Doesn't that already happen though?
Yeah. Well, there's certainly a lot of barriers just because there's so many of them, and the top few are always going to get way more attention than the others, but it's just another barrier that I think just, yeah, wouldn't help anything.
Right. I just think of these algorithms, right, that control searches and control who gets viewed on Facebook and Instagram. They're so finicky. Yeah. And, you know, it's a lot of it is just like has been machine learning, right? So a lot of it is just the program will find something that works, right?
Yeah.
But like trying to grow an Instagram following is really weird because you have to look at all these weird, like, little analytics that you could fulfill that would help you get onto higher pages and have higher, engagement on your posts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even really about having the best content, per se. it's more so just about like having other people who like are big names like your stuff, right?
Yeah.
And it's just a weird way of how things like float to the top and how people get bigger, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That and with like internet searches, right? Because companies can pay. Yeah, you can pay right now to have your company at the top of the list, right? When someone Googles something, right? Yeah. How is that really fair? Like, how does that not infringe on the net neutrality thing?
I mean, when I do a Google search, if it is a company that's paying to be there, typically it will say ad, which is okay. Good. But then again, how do you have any way of knowing just the way the algorithm is built? People could take advantage of that. It's really interesting listening to YouTubers, for example, talk about tricks to increase the amount of engagement their videos will get, in terms of when you're making the description, you don't put links that lead away from the site, because YouTube wants you to stay on YouTube, so they'll put one further down. So you only link to other YouTube videos, or don't link at all.
Really?
Yeah, and just putting stuff in the title. I mean, you've seen how having all cap titles obviously is a big thing. Everyone does that. And I guess it just makes it crazier. Lots of videos, the title and the thumbnail will have nothing to do with the rest of the video.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, how did this video get that many views? Well, because it was just complete clickbait.
Yeah, I've seen so many videos like that, right? And the truth to that is, though, there's a lot of videos where I'll see the thumbnail and the title and I'll go, okay, this sounds interesting. And then it'll be something completely unrelated. But then I'll just go, wait, that was actually kind of cool. So, I don't know. It's a weird kind of advertising scheme.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
There's my favorite... Go ahead. I was going to say, my favorite of the vloggers... I used to watch Casey Neistat's vlog.
Okay.
He had some really cool stuff. He's a really good filmmaker, but I stopped watching, partly because what a waste of time. or not a waste of time, but definitely could be doing better things. And
yeah, it takes up a lot of time.
He just kind of got more and more into doing stuff for views and changing his persona on camera. But yeah, it's funny just seeing them making a daily video and the title will be like crazy something, like insert title, but it's such a small fragment of the rest of the video.
Yeah. I just noticed, like, scrolling through the trending page of YouTube, whenever it's a Jake Paul or Logan Paul video, it's all caps, intense, in your face. Yeah. Those guys are crazy, like, just so horrible.
Yeah. It does seem like there's a lot of hypocrisy amongst YouTube when it comes to demonetizing videos and who's on the trending page. Because, yeah, it seems like the Pauls and just all these YouTube channels, some of them get on the trending page all the time and argue their content is much more harmful than other ones that will mention some violence or even hunting,
right?
And that gets demonetized. I guess it's just the algorithm, but it's hard to feel like they aren't picking sides.
Yeah, maybe it's just that they probably take into account negative feedback on like a video, right? Like, so like, I don't know, maybe the dislikes on the video not only, but also the comments and stuff that, who knows? I don't know. It definitely seems weird. Maybe there's something that these YouTubers that get on this page all the time, on the trending page, know that nobody else does.
I don't know. Maybe they're just... That's where all the money is. And 10-year-olds watching.
10-year-olds
and 20-something-year-olds doing stupid stuff.
Doing shitty things to your friends. Yeah, they kind of just abuse each other. It's really too bad.
There's so many videos and YouTube accounts basically based around critiquing and making fun of other YouTubers that are just doing stupid stuff. I mean, PewDiePie, H3H3.
Yeah.
They're super funny, but yeah, it's just gossip.
Yeah.
Back to that.
It's a lot of gossip.
Yeah.
I guess gossip is a big thing that humans like, right?
Yeah. It's just you and your tribe. But now it's you're gossiping about people that you have don't know at all. Yeah. They have no clue who you are. Yeah. And you'll never have an impact on them. So.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, I finished that book, Sapiens. What's the guy's name that wrote it?
Noah Yuval Harari. I think I might have mixed up some consonants there. But
I think it's, let's see here. I have it right here. Yuval Noah Harari.
Yuval Noah Harari.
Yeah.
Got the order on.
Yeah, so what did you think of it?
I really liked it. I think it gave me a different perspective on a lot of things, and
yeah, I think
just on humans, how the way we organize ourselves as a species,
right? So basically, the book is just kind of breaking down the history of humankind, and it's pretty much just a straight history book, right? But he goes into his own little perspective on different things, right? Yeah. And yeah, I thought it was definitely a perspective that I wouldn't have taken if I didn't read the book on a lot of things. The guy definitely likes to tear down things that people take for granted, right?
That's true.
A really neat thing that I thought he said was when he was just talking about how humans today think that they're smarter than humans like 500 years ago or 2,000 years ago, right?
Yeah.
In terms of pure just problem-solving ability and intellect, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's that makes absolutely no sense why that would be the case, right?
Oh, his argument that they'd be smarter back then?
Not even smarter, just, like, even on equal, right? Because I think the common sentiment now is that everybody feels very pompous, right, about how smart they are now and how much we know and how archaic everybody was even 50 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I just kind of go, if you were in their position, you'd do the exact same thing, right? Like, you're no better than anybody. You're no smarter than anybody 200 years ago, 300 years ago, right?
Yeah, no, just because you know black holes exist doesn't make you smarter than Einstein.
Yeah, it's not like you did any of that work. Or obviously, there are some people that, like, we kind of stand on the shoulders of giants, you know?
Yeah. I thought a really interesting concept in the book was that humans in that tribal environment on the savannah in Africa, just being hunter-gatherers, it seemed like he was arguing that that's basically the optimal environment for humans.
Yeah.
He did offer a lot of caveats to that, such as, like, obviously life could be pretty brutal, infant mortality was remarkably high, but it is interesting to think of just where their psyche would have been at living in that way. Because if you think about it, their diet would have been the best possible.
Right.
Their sleep would have been the best. Socially, everything would be very manageable. All their instincts, that things like the internet kind of exploit today, would have been properly suited for their environment.
Yeah, I definitely guess so. My only issue with that, right, is I definitely think that it seems like back then was maybe the healthier environment, just because we hadn't really outgrown our evolutionary habitat, right? Like, we adapted for however long to this way of life, right? Then we kind of just blew out of it and did some crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how easy it is to make the conclusion that things were better back then, or like people's psyches were better, right? Because I just think it's really hard to know that, right?
That's true.
Like, I think obviously their diet was better, right? Mm-hmm. And you can say that they had a lot of things better, but was life really better? I don't know. It's I think that people often look back on history and different empires even, or countries, and then they just categorize them blatantly as bad or good, right?
Yeah.
And I think that is kind of the wrong interpretation of a lot of it, right? because everything's going to have bad and good. And I just think that you got to look at things and go, okay, it was just there, right?
Yeah, I did like the way he kind of used that to talk about empires and stuff.
Yeah, for sure, because, you know, let's look at the USA, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people right now that hate the USA, that live in the USA, because they feel guilty because the USA has done some dark things in the past, some things that today would be considered abhorrent, right?
Correct, yeah.
But, you know, they've done some good things, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to just blanket them in one thing or another, because I think you just got to go, okay, they just did things, right? They existed, and just not immediately jump to putting them into a bad or good umbrella, right? Because at the end of the day, you're just like using your definition, your subjective view of like what is morally right or bad, wrong. So
yeah, no, I definitely think that it for those type of things, it's definitely better to just say it is what it is.
Yeah,
you have to take both sides of it, because
yeah.
And the other thing is, I don't like the idea of condemning anyone from, or groups of people from different time periods. Obviously, like, you can condemn some of their actions, but to almost, some people talk about it as if to hold them accountable.
Right.
Whereas if they were born into that, into their role, that's the path they would have taken. And yeah, it's just your environment would shape your decisions, and because you're in a different environment now, I don't think that it really gives you the position to condemn things and blame the people that were part of them.
Right.
Obviously, it's about getting better, but yeah, that specifically.
Yeah, it's really easy to blame people in the past when you're here comfortable in your sofa with air conditioning blasting.
Yeah.
And food on your table, right? So, I don't know. It's pretty interesting. I even think of, like, Mayan tribes and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these tribes are doing crazy things, like things that today we consider crazy, like sacrificing children, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just go, like, to them that made a lot of sense, which is weird, but...
And they felt just as... or they were just as convinced that what they were doing was good as we are about what we're doing now.
Yeah, it's everybody thinks that they're right, no matter like who else or how many opinions are out there, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, people will probably say, looking back on agriculture and the way we treat animals on farms, like, with contempt, but for us now, it's just, well, that's just the way it is. We need meat. We need to have food, and this is the way we have to do it.
Right. But
granted, if technology gives us an option to do things more ethically, yeah, people will just take a different stance on things. They'll be much more critical.
Yeah, I think exactly what you're saying is, let's say that people start making artificial meat, right? Don't have to slaughter animals anymore, or dairy products that are completely artificial. People look back and go, oh my God, everyone in the early 20th century, or sorry, 21st century, was absolutely horrible. They treated animals so poorly.
Yeah, these creatures. No ethics.
But at this time, what are we going to do? Everybody likes meat, right?
Yeah. Kind of need it. Like, the idea that everyone would go vegan is pretty unrealistic, but props to those who are doing it.
I was actually watching a video about some people who lived in Mongolia, right? They lived in just kind of the middle of nowhere in Mongolia, in like a little hut, and they seemed like perfectly content people, right? But their entire diet consisted of, it was like products made from goat milk and like dairy.
Which just was dairy.
Yeah, like they would, oh gosh, what was it, and grains as well, sorry, but like they'd make like a bowl of grains with milk, right? and they would scald the milk, and but that's all they ate. They didn't eat any vegetables, really, or fruits. Or they had meats, obviously. But yeah, their whole diet was just animal products. So I just think, like, how can you judge someone like that, right?
Yeah.
And even now, how can you convince someone like that to go vegan, right?
It's pretty tough. I mean, yeah. An all-meat diet, you can definitely get everything you need from it. And so humans are built to make meat, or to eat meat.
Yeah.
Just from a biological sense, there's lots of things that are just there because we eat meat. But
yeah.
Like, same thing goes with the Inuit. They only eat meat.
Right.
Basically just all seals and caribou, other Arctic animals, but apparently they can get vitamin C if they eat all the different parts of the animal.
Right.
Whereas if you just eat the flesh, like meat, without touching any of the organs, you won't get that. So that's why people got scurvy.
Interesting.
But it's pretty cool that you can get everything you need just from an animal.
What kind of organs would you be eating for vitamin C?
I'm not sure. I'm going to Google that. I'm going to pull that up right now.
Here, I've got it.
Okay. What's the spleen? The
Oh, if you eat the brain?
The brain.
Yeah, so I guess you'd eat the brain, right? Like, the brain's got a lot of nutrients. That's kind of crazy. I don't think I'd ever eat brains. Would you eat brains?
I was just thinking about it now. It's a really cool concept. You're eating someone's thoughts.
I guess so.
Like, this animal was thinking and making decisions, and it felt things.
I wonder what the texture of that would be like.
I'm reading a book right now by a brain surgeon, and he says it basically is the consistency of jelly.
Raw, really that, at least. It's really that soft, hey?
Yeah, it's not that rigid at all.
I don't know.
You can just kind of, you could poke your finger into it, probably.
See, I picture a brain, and like from pictures, my impression is that it would be kind of firm, right? Like you could pick it up and kind of squeeze it in your hand and it would be fine. But I guess you look at concussions, right? And people get tapped on the head and they're out, right? So it must be pretty soft. But anyway, what are some other things that you think will be gone in, let's say, 500 years and people look back and go, were these people crazy? Huh. Just because it's so weird. Is there anything else you think?
I mean, if I think of the biggest injustices that come to mind would be...
Not even injustices, but just like cultural norms.
Yeah.
Social norms. It's really, that's a really hard exercise to do because you're so immersed in them that you just have no idea.
I think the family unit is...
it's going to be disassembled.
Maybe. I was getting there.
You never know. Because you think about what's going on with just how people are conceived even, right? Yeah. I mean, there's women that can get pregnant without a man at all.
Just go to the bank.
It's not even the bank, but what they can do now. I don't know if they can do this fully, but I've read some articles about how they can use the DNA from a woman's egg to fertilize another egg.
Would that just make you a clone of...
No. It's two women, right?
Yeah.
But obviously they're going to have a female offspring, right? Because there's no Y chromosomes involved. But it's two sets of DNA, right?
Yes.
But it's an egg fertilizing an egg, right?
Huh. That's pretty odd. That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, that would be pretty neat. So I don't know. Maybe that's a thing. Yeah. Maybe with all this technology, the family unit will just be a thing of the past.
Pretty interesting.
It'll turn into Brave New World, Aldous or Aldous Huxley.
Brave New World is a good book.
Yeah. I thought it was a really interesting concept. Yeah.
Well, I think that with the family unit, the main thing is so much of your life is determined by just who you're, like the family you're born into. So in terms of equal opportunity, you could make a good case that that's such a inequality that exists. But again, I don't know if it happened, but 500 years is a long time. So
that is true.
Who knows what humanity will look like?
Yeah, it might be just... What if it's gone? That'd be really upsetting.
That would be sad. I hope
it's not gone.
That would just be so much more boring.
Yeah.
I just had a thought when you had a...
Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, I just had a thought when you talked about the eggs, fertilizing the egg. Imagine raising a clone of yourself as your child. And it was just terrifying. It was just like you. And you watch them go through life pretty much the exact same way you had. But you have your knowledge and you're just... It'd be so hard to not... Get so frustrated.
You just you'd yell at yourself. That's all you'd be doing. You'd just be going, why am I so dumb? What is wrong with me?
That'd be so interesting. You'd see yourself from other people's eyes too.
That is true. That would be fascinating because, yeah, there's been a lot of times in my life where even my parents, I'm doing something and they'll just criticize me and I just don't even understand where they're coming from, right? I just don't get it. But seeing it from their eyes, I might go, wow, this makes sense.
It'd be so interesting. Like you wouldn't even know, or your current preconception of what that would look like, it could be completely different. Your child would just be almost a different person than what you'd expect.
Yeah, you might just have no idea what you're like.
That's
really scary.
It's pretty freaky. It's kind of interesting though. It is weird to think about just what other people's general perception of you is. And like even though you I was just going to say like, even though there's like social media, that's like stuff is only really determined by likes now. It's not like there's any you still can't get a solid feel for it.
Right. And your opinion on someone is pretty complex, right? Yeah.
And it's going to vary between people a ton.
Yeah, but I wonder if there would be a way just to average all out everybody's opinions of you.
Yeah.
And just be like, this is what people think of you in general.
I actually read a while ago, so this was a few years back, but apparently there was a study that was done, and they said that the conclusions were that people's general idea of what everyone else is like in general thinks of them is actually sort of accurate. So
yeah, that's what I've heard too.
But when it comes to individual people, it could vary wildly. Like, people can be pretty bad at evaluating that.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. But then again, I still go and I look at the people that I hang out with. And there's different groups of people that I hang out with. They're big groups, right?
Yeah.
But I can just tell that the way these people view me in each of these groups as a whole is so much different between like the different types of group who I'm hanging out with, right? Mm-hmm. And I find it strange how much my mannerisms and my personality can be influenced by who I'm around, right?
That's because true.
You kind of just cater towards like a certain crowd, right? Like if a crowd's interested in like football, right? You're going to be like more inclined to talk about that, right? Or if you're around a crowd that's really outgoing and stuff, you want to keep up. Mm-hmm. But if you're around a crowd that's like more calm and just wants to talk about interesting stuff, right? You become a very different person, which is really strange. And I don't think that there's anybody that really avoids that in their life unless they're hanging out with the same like-minded people all the time.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty uncomfortable when you're friends with people that have never interacted before, and then all of a sudden you're there all together, and it's like they're each seeing a different part of you. It is enlightening to look to meet someone around their different friends and just see what they're like, because it's a different side of them that you don't really see.
Sometimes for me those situations go really well.
Yeah.
And it's nice. But other times I just feel super uncomfortable because I just go, one group of these people just hasn't seen the side of me before. Yeah. They don't know what they're getting.
It's unpredictable. It's chaos.
Yeah. It is a little bit of chaos.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because I've got a whole bunch of friends at UBC that are really, they're really inclined to spend a lot of time on school. And that's kind of their whole lives, is just school. They talk about it a lot. I'd classify them as nerds, right?
Okay.
But then I hang out with some other people that don't care at all, right? They're just social butterflies. And there's been a few times where I've seen both these groups of people in the same place, and talking to them at the same time, it's just like, I don't know how to act. I feel pretty out of my element, which is strange, but...
Sometimes it feels like it doesn't even work. If you're with someone and just the Venn diagram does not, there's not much overlap at all in terms of what you can all talk about.
But sometimes I go through my phone, right? I look through my messages. Yeah. And I just look at how I text different people, right?
How many letters you use in different words and just what you say.
And I think also I just kind of copy people when I text them, right? Yeah. So if someone's texting me a certain style, I'll kind of just copy back to them what the way they're texting, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like,
which is really strange.
Especially with emojis. I don't really use emojis at all anymore, but... back when they were more of a thing, if I was texting someone, I just matched their emoji level. I guess they're probably in the same position, but...
So nobody really knows what they're doing. Yeah. Everybody's just trying to copy each other.
It's pretty evident in text, but I'm sure that all the same idiosyncrasies are found in regular conversation, which is interesting to think about.
Yeah it totally is the case. I totally catch myself talking differently to different people. Yeah. And it's not like you're a different person. It's just that different sides of you come out, right?
Mm-hmm. Recently, I feel like I'm more aware of habits I get into when talking to people. Lots of the time I rush through things and I don't give myself that much time to pause.
Okay.
I guess this podcast might have helped a bit in that, but... I'm just more mindful of the way I talk. I'm trying to slow down a bit more.
That's good. Something I've noticed is that you really got to cherish the moments when you don't have a lot going on and really use those moments to like reflect, because when things get busy, you're kind of just floating around, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're just bouncing around. A lot of the time you're just going off of like, not necessarily instinct, but you're just making snap decisions, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't really have time to analyze the way that you're acting.
Yeah.
Yeah, just this summer when I had a lot of time, I had a lot of time to reflect and look at myself, and it was pretty interesting. But then as soon as I get back out to Vancouver, starting school again and trying to get myself settled, I've got so many things going on that I can't think about any of that stuff, right? It's crazy.
Yeah, no, even today, like, there's nothing much on my plate right now, but there's still, I got to set up my calendar, and then I got to go get my books and get a locker. Yeah. There's just so many problems to kind of deal with.
No, I totally agree.
I've started listening to less music now when I'm doing more mundane things, because...
I listen to virtually none.
Yeah. When I listen to music, I make a point of listening to it. It's basically all I'm doing.
Right.
Or I'm just doing something super mundane. But, if I'm taking my dog on a walk, I just try to just set that time as thinking time, just where you can process things a bit more.
Yeah. I think the biggest time for listening to music for me is on car rides.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I feel like when you're driving that... you kind of got to be half focused on the road.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't feel like I can... I don't think I get into my head enough, right? And I don't think that I can just have time to think, because I'm also thinking about something else at the same time. So I just like blare out all my thoughts, listen to music. It works pretty well, so...
See, when a sauna really like comes on, though, that's got a lot of energy, I start driving faster, though.
Do you actually?
Yeah.
I guess so.
It's kind of funny. Or another thing is whenever I have people in the car, I think it's just a product of still being a teenager and having not a fully developed brain. But if there's other people in the car, I just am a much more aggressive driver just because I'm talking to them. And
you're much more aggressive, really.
I'd say so. And not even consciously. I'm just much more... I guess when I'm driving by myself... I'm just much more mindful of the fact that I don't want to get in another accident. And just to be more aware of the fact I'm driving, but if I have other people in the car, I'm just talking to them, and like I can get excited about things, and before you know it, I'm
really
going pretty quick. But nothing extreme, yeah. But definitely a difference.
I think that when I have other people in the car, I kind of slow down a little bit. Especially as of late, I've realized more and more that there's no reason to drive like a maniac.
Yeah.
There really isn't. Yeah. It's just, the only reason to drive like a maniac is just because it's kind of fun and exhilarating. No,
absolutely. Like,
other than that.
Could you imagine if your commute every day was just, get there as fast as you can, there's no cars on the highway or on the road, no traffic lights, just, you're following the track.
That'd be stressful.
No, I think that'd be fun. Like,
Oh, you're saying that there's no cars on the road?
Yeah, no cars. It's just a racetrack, basically. Then it becomes super fun. Yeah,
that would
probably hurt yourself, but
you'd hurt yourself really bad.
Gosh. Yeah. What was I gonna say?
I can't stand driving now. It's just it's a tough part. But I don't drive anymore. I take the bus. I get rides. Mm-hmm. So.
I really changed my driving. I really changed my driving habits after I did that driver safety course.
Okay.
Oddly enough,
did they scare you into it?
A little bit, yeah. Well, I used to always go 10% above. Basically, like never go above 10, or else you know you're gonna get a ticket. But now I basically drive at the speed limit, which it feels so slow at first, but after a while you just get used to it. You're not getting anywhere that much faster. Maybe saving 1 or 2 minutes if you speed. If like you get in a car accident, you're more likely to hurt yourself or other people. Or it's just a much more relaxed way of accepting that I'm just going to get there when I want to get there, when I'm driving. Yeah, as opposed to making it a game that I'm probably going to lose.
The winner of that game is the insurance company. It's actually not even, they want you to be safe, but nobody wins.
Yeah.
Seriously. No, it is like that. A lot of young people drive crazy, right? I think people mellow out as they get older.
Yeah. Seems like
but
it.
There still are some pretty intense type A personalities that go nuts on the road.
Yeah. I haven't ever seen someone really freak out, but I would like to. I've mainly just watched YouTube videos. I can't imagine people just getting out of their cars, or threatening violence over getting.
Do people do that anymore? I feel like that's a really risky thing to do, to threaten violence.
It seems really rare. I've just seen YouTube videos, and in my driver safety course, they talked about it. So obviously, it's a little bit of a thing.
I bet that back when there wasn't cell phones or anything, that would be more of a thing. People just fight each other because what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Record it? No, you can't.
I wonder if 300 years ago, what there would be tons of cell phone videos of if they had a camera with them all the time. Like if there was all, what is it? World Star? In the 1700s, what would that look like? Just people doing dumb shit on horses.
Be scary. I don't want to see that. Yeah. Social media in the 1700s. People taking pictures of like... It'd just be weird. It'd be weird. I don't even want to think about that.
Makes me paintings of themselves up.
People posting paintings. Be pretty funny. Yeah.
It'd be fun to get a portrait made of yourself. That must have been such a big deal back then.
Oh, yeah. It would totally be a big deal.
It's like, are you ready to have the one picture that will take probably in a decade or in your life?
Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah. Most people just didn't even have them.
Yeah. Are you someone who likes getting your picture taken or no?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
What comes to mind is it depends if it looks good or not. But
that's exactly it, right? Depends on how nice the camera is.
Yeah, I think it's such a great gift to give someone pictures. Especially like you and them, like
yeah,
receiving those are good gifts to get, and
especially if they're good pictures.
Yeah,
but if they're crappy ones, then there's no point.
It'd be fun to have a good camera.
I think it would get boring pretty quick.
Like I think you could really get into it though, like just the mindset of trying to make a good image.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, my friend Chelsea, she has, I think a couple old cameras now, and she's always, like, bringing them to parties and stuff like that. And it's pretty cool. I think having cameras at a party is so much fun, too. I mean, people always say no pictures, right, because you don't want the record of it, but if that threat was eliminated, then it becomes just super fun.
I guess so. Yeah,
it's a bit of a recollection of it.
Recollection for everybody who's forgotten about it. Very interesting. So how has been university?
It's been all right. It feels like there's so many people on campus right now, and it's funny just thinking that the reason that there's so many is, or it feels like there's so many, is because a lot of them are going to drop out and then you just be left with less people.
Yeah. I wonder how many people drop out of university.
I guess people skip college. In my chemistry class from last year, it felt like a third or more of the kids in my chem lab were gone.
No way, that's so many. Like,
by the end of the course, yeah.
How do you just drop out of something like that? Like, do you go in just not realizing that you're going to be doing chemistry? Do you think that
I guess it's
going to be different?
Realize they hate it. Or
yeah, that's an abrupt realization.
Well, I know a lot of people, if they're trying to get into medical school or dentistry, if they're not getting the grade, then it's pull pin, because you don't want that to bring down your GPA. But it is such a big setback.
Yeah. Medical school has just become a crazy thing, I think.
It's insane. Like, apparently, it gets more intense every year. In terms of competitiveness.
Yeah. And also, it just seems like now becoming a doctor is kind of everybody's way of just becoming wealthy, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of just like this golden road. This yellow brick road to being successful and wealthy. Yeah. It's easy. Not necessarily easy, but once you do it, right, it's straightforward. You don't have to forge your own path. It's just right there in front of you. You just got to do it.
It's very well defined.
You
know exactly what you got to do.
Yeah, I think that's a big attraction for a lot of people. But it definitely is so overly competitive. And a lot of people just don't even know what it's like, right?
Yeah. It's funny because when I listen to doctors talk about their jobs, like, some of them love it, but then some of them just don't really like it. It seems like they treat it as a very gloomy career, and obviously it would be dealing with people in those situations 24/7. Yeah. But,
I definitely think it could be. That could be a traumatizing thing. Imagine being a doctor who, I don't know. I think being a physician would be bad, but being like an ER doctor, seeing people die on a regular basis, that'd be pretty intense.
I think being a surgeon would be the most.
That'd be lots of pressure. Yeah. You got to be good with stress in that job.
Yeah. Like, I'm reading this book, you should read it, by Henry Marsh. There's one, Do No Harm, and then the second one's called Admissions. But it's just him basically giving an honest account of what it's like to be a brain surgeon. And I mean, whenever you go to the doctor, you like to think of, oh, this person is fully equipped to do whatever needs to be done, and they're going to do it properly. And you don't get the sense that there's ever going to be mistakes made, or you feel like human error really isn't a factor. At least for me, I don't worry about that when I go to a doctor.
Yeah.
And I think it's something you can't really worry about, but it is a factor. Just listening to him talk about it, the anxiety of going into an operation and just having to be confident in yourself, but then if you mess up, the setback that is, and how hard it is to get back in the operating room to perform another procedure, and just how catastrophic the consequences are of, especially being a brain surgeon, if you make a misstep, the person can go blind. Like any problem can happen. You can put them in a coma. Like that just seems ultra stress. I can't think of a more stressful job.
Definitely. Whenever I've been for surgery or anything like that, I just look at the surgeon. I just go, hey, this is this big, I just picture some big, well-respected person who is almost godlike, you know? I just picture them as perfect, right? Mm-hmm. Every aspect of their life is just fine, right? Mm-hmm. But you don't realize that this person is someone who might go home and argue with their spouse, right? Or, I don't know, they could have any kind of problem that any person might have. And you're just putting so much trust into that someone blindly.
They got lost the same worries and thoughts you got going on. And
yeah.
It's interesting listening to them talk about just like just what they talk about before an operation too. Because when you're dealing with a patient, and like when I'm talking to a doctor, it definitely is a much different tone than the candid approach they just have talking to another doctor.
Right.
So it's just weird hearing them talk about, oh, this is going to be hard, and just they're being nervous about it, and
yeah. You ever think that before you go into surgery, if you're thinking, wow, I hope the doctor does a good job, I'm really scared. The doctor might be going, I hope I do a good job, I'm really scared. Yeah, you never know.
Yeah. It'd be pretty interesting. I think it'd be such a great feeling to pull off an operation. I saved your life.
It'd be pretty intense, especially if it was a life-saving one, right? Yeah. But even then, there's a lot that aren't life-saving that would feel life-saving.
Yeah.
Even if you're doing something like plastics, right? Mm-hmm. Repairing someone's face, like, that's pretty impressive. That kind of changes someone's whole outlook.
There was this one girl, they've done it a few times, but they covered it in an article I read, and it was about a girl that she had attempted suicide and blown off her face with a shotgun.
Oh, yes, I saw this.
Yeah, so they did a face transplant. And just listening to the doctors talk about it, and just how much they don't know about it, it's obviously very exploratory, and they're just figuring a way to put this person's face on. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I thought that was a very interesting one, for sure. Mm-hmm.
It'd be hard to not let your ego get out of hand as a doctor, especially if you had a lot of success. But saving lives. Yeah,
I guess so. Yeah. Definitely.
It seems like a pretty, very interesting career.
Interesting, to say the least. But a lot of those guys just lose it with stress and stuff. So they ask a lot of them, going in for surgery for 20 hours straight, that takes a toll on you.
Yeah.
You aren't going to be doing surgery as well at the 19th hour as you are in the first.
Mm-hmm. Like,
so yeah.
You're probably going to make a lot of mistakes, or more mistakes than you would have.
Yeah, so it seems like it would take a perfectionist to do that job.
Yeah. And it's interesting that for a job that your sleep schedule can be thrown around so much and just destroyed. Like making little mistakes that having a lack of sleep could increase the chance of it have such big consequences. But I guess you just need doctors 24/7.
Right. A lot of these doctors, though, I just wonder how they're not kept in bubble wrap, right? A lot of them, it just seems that they need to be in such pristine condition to do what they do, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to a friend of mine out here, and he was saying that this guy, you know, is a... what kind of surgeon is... I think he's a plastic surgeon. Right, but he's a very good plastic surgeon, but he's got his hands insured for hundreds of thousands of dollars in case he breaks his hands.
You can actually do that?
Yeah, as a surgeon, he has to, for his thing, because like, just think, he breaks a finger, right? His career could be over.
That's nuts.
Yeah, and apparently this doctor is very... careful about being injured, but at the same time does the most reckless stuff, but will like avoid opportunities for getting his hands injured, right?
Yeah.
But he's big into skiing, a whole bunch of other stuff. That seems kind of counterintuitive, but
he's putting a lot on the line.
Yeah, I don't know. It would take a very interesting person.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you'd have good, like, hand dexterity when it comes to surgery?
I don't know. I'm worried that my hands would be a bit shaky.
Me too. My
hands aren't the steadiest.
Yeah. No, I get that a lot, that I feel like my hands are shaky. I feel like, part of me wonders if from reffing so much, my hands get so cold as a hockey referee.
Okay.
If they've been damaged. And let's close that door for me, but that's probably just me being paranoid.
I find that if I don't have enough sleep, my hands get really shaky, or if I haven't eaten, or if anything is wrong with me physiologically, like I haven't eaten, I'm thirsty, I'm stressed, my hands just shake a little bit, which isn't really what you want in a surgery.
Whoa.
Hold on. Just let me go have my muffin. I need a quick snack break.
Get crumbs on the patient.
Yeah, it's a pretty strange job. Huh. I don't know if I would want that much pressure, but, you know, someone's got to do it.
Apparently lots of surgery is done with robots now, though.
I don't know if it's lots. From what I've been reading is that it's really hard to get the robots in because the majority of surgeries, or almost all, can be still done better by humans.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to chance a surgery to a robot, right?
That's true. I more so mean humans using robotic tools.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that can move just with much more precision.
Right. Yeah, they've started using things that aren't solid robots, right? So, like, they're soft robots.
Actually?
Yeah. So, it'll be, like, there's some pretty innovative things, right? Mm-hmm. For example, I think it was something to clear a gallstone, or what they did, instead of using, like, a hard tube that they put up someone, they would use something that would inflate with air, and different compartments could inflate with air at different times, right? Mm-hmm. Because it just causes less damage to people, right? Yeah. It's not as bad for them.
It's pretty neat. I mean, my surgery that I'm getting coming up, it's all done with a... What's it called? Like a scope? So they just make a little incision, so, and poke it up there, and can do everything looking through the camera.
So you dislocated your shoulder.
Yes.
So are you getting arthroscopic surgery? Is that what it is?
What is arthroscopic surgery as a definition? And like, is that,
they just make a cut
and then like put a camera in with all the tools. It's not like they're cutting my shoulder open so they can see everything with their own eyes.
Mm-hmm.
It's less invasive.
It's just like on the joint, right? And it's not very invasive at all.
Yeah.
It's more so just to, like a lot of athletes get it done on their knees and stuff. If their knees have become really scarred, like there's a lot of scar tissue built up on the muscles and tendons, mm-hmm. they'll get it.
Okay,
that'll be interesting.
I gotta go right now.
All right.
But it was a pleasure on the Wide-Eyed Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. Take it easy.
Stay tuned.